If you're tuning in, this is episode number 3 of the WFN Pop-Up Podcasts. We are interviewing the candidates for chief and council, although we've only tackled council up to this point, which is fine. Sitting with me here, sitting with Jared and I here, we have Mike DiGavera. Now, the way this is normally going, you've been listening to this podcast, and if you've seen what we've done on Facebook or if we've talked to you, is that we usually have a format of 3 themes the candidate brings. And then in turn, Jared and I ask 3 questions based on governance, culture, and healthy community. This time it's going to be a little different. We're going to be asking the questions this time. Hopefully meaningful questions, hopefully questions that our listeners out there will care about. And again, we just want to reiterate that this is just to better inform our community the best that we can. If you're listening to this and you're a candidate and you have not yet reached out to us, or maybe we have perhaps missed you somehow, we want to hear from you. We want you to come on too. This is not about one single person or anyone's necessarily anyone's platform. This is about our community having a greater capacity to hear and understand what these candidates want to bring to the table. So without further ado, we're moving forward. Mike. Cousin Mike. Yeah. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Good. Thanks for coming over today and taking the entrance to get informed about where the West Bank First Nation community is going as it relates to our election coming up for the next 3 years.
And yep.
2019, come fast approaching, and about a month out, and I guess we're there.
Can I ask you, how old are you?
I'm 54.
You're 54.
I know,
you look,
right?
You're like you're about 35, because I'm 35 and we look the same. We're like literally the exact same amount of wrinkles.
No.
And that's bad for me, good for you. How old were you when you got into council? Because you were in council for a while. You were in about 5 terms.
I was elected when I was 34.
You were 34 years old.
About 20 years ago.
You had young kids and you were in for 5.
I did my first term with Chief Ron Derrickson at the time in 1998 to 2000. We were under the Indian Act at that point, governed under the Indian Act.
Right.
And so I did my first term under with Ron, and we've since transformed, as you know. I've done 12 years consecutively from 2004 to 2016.
Right.
So I've got 14 years as an elected official.
14 years.
Yeah. So it's been a while. It's been a good transformation. I was a part of the path to self-government, creating the institutions for good governance, having been a member of council in 98 to 2000 under the Indian Act was clearly an outdated piece of legislation for WFN.
Right.
And so at that time, there was a movement for various reasons for WFN to explore the options of self-governance. So I was a part of that, part of the constitutional development and the constitution that we are governed, your elected officials are governed under today.
Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah.
So I've got a bit of a history. I understand kind of where we were. I know where we have been and know where we're. And I was a part of building the governance. I think I was 45 employees when I entered WFN. And I seen the growth and development to over 190, about 195.
You guys weren't even using the whole band office at the time. Like, it was, I think I remember the second floor was like a couple, it was rented out space.
It was certainly rented out. And was, the transformation into self-government was a good one. I overseen and monitored on behalf of West Bank. I was an honor to oversee and monitor the implementation activities on behalf of West Bank as their rep, alongside with Canada's appointed rep.
So you were working with the Feds, like you had like a guy from the Feds.
And overseen and monitored that the implementation plan that we had accompanied our self-government agreement. So, and we've done well. We've done remarkably well. We govern 10,000 people plus ourselves, and we have a tax regime. But we've done quite well. There's always room for improvement. But we do have some institutions of everywhere you look around the community, from from not only the government, but the health and wellness center.
Can I just pause you there for a second? What improvements do you think that we could see in the next 3 years if you were elected?
Well, improvements are all around you, you can't just say, well, this is what I'm going to do.
Well, policy improvement-wise, yeah,
improvement, you know, there's... I'm not going to get on the side of, you know... I know good governance needs to occur. I know there's a lack of... there's uncertainty right now kind of looming over some of the employees and some of the direction as to... There's a lot of lawsuits going on right now. There's budgets. It's been budgeted because of some of the HR issues and some of the governance practices that are going on.
We're talking in the past, like a couple years, or like we're talking extended over the past.
So, I mean, the first and foremost is it's community health and wellness and government stability. And I mean health and wellness overall for our overall community. You know, we do have accountability. We do have the tools that are in place. We do have a comprehensive community plan that is a law. Mm-hmm. And we do have sound policy and procedure. I believe we are second to no one in this country when it comes to policy and procedure.
So, but do you believe there's improvements that
always could be? Room for improvement.
Where?
Working as a team, as leadership working together, working with the community. From what I understand with the community, and some of my discussions, as I outlined in my, you know...
Your bio.
My bio, you know, the title and rights, the reconciliation issues have fallen off the table. Late coming around. Now you have a Liberal government that's going to be a minority government. When there was an appetite to reconcile our outstanding issues, it took us years... under a conservative government to finally get a window with this new Liberal government 5 years ago.
So let's talk about that reconciliation for a second, because if for those listeners out there, you know, this whole reconciliation thing it was coined off of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which of course was basically a mimicry of what had happened in Australia with their Truth and Reconciliation Commission.
But
so when we say Truth and Reconciliation, we're talking about, are you talking the 94 calls to action? Or are we talking because we already have self-government.
That's as it deals with our reserve lands.
Right.
That's where our jurisdiction ends.
So when you say reconciliation...
We have 69,000 square kilometers of traditional territory amongst the Okanagan Nation that we're a part of.
So you're saying reconciliation involves getting that land under our jurisdiction as a nation or as a community?
Not necessarily the land, but co-management about what goes on within our traditional territory.
The rights, the management policies.
Being a decision maker, being a... Where's our game wardens? Where's our conservation officers? How are we governing the land and being a partner to that? Because we are equal partners.
So I'm going to play...
Those discussions, we had got a table with Canada in our last term as council in 2016.
Right.
That has slid off the rails.
So when you say it slid off the rails and it's come off the table, what does it look like to bring it back on the metaphorical table? Specifically.
Are we going to get it on table? I just read a new bulletin or a media release by Grand Chief Stuart Phillip to the Okanagan Nation Alliance and its members that reconciliation discussions have halted. They just got... Because
of the federal election coming up, probably going to be a minority government uncertainty.
We lost a couple years... Under the present leadership.
So let's say that reconciliation would come back. Let's just say that it's going to come back. What does it look like to get it back on the table?
First of all, you're not going to have... That's complex.
Sure.
Who knows what the mandate or the new policy or the of the conservatives...
What was your mandate for reconciliation when you guys were in council? You said 2016 it started coming on the table.
I don't think it's changed for WFN. Reconcile, with the need to reconcile. Just that the conservative government had a no policy.
Right.
There was no table. We had a table set up with the Liberals. We were slow coming around.
Right.
So you think we've lost a huge opportunity.
So you think that now with the change of regime in the Canadian government, we're going to have to go a protectionist route? Or do you think that we're going to be able to build another conversation with the conservative government at some point, because it has to be something, right? We can't worry about reconciliation being halted and then just say, well, we'll wait till the next government. We're not supposed to rely.
Wasn't our self-government agreement signed under the conservatives?
Yeah.
No, we were under the liberals, but regardless of that, that's an act. It went through.
But what didn't a lot of it go forward in the conservatives?
You know, it was the liberal government.
That was really like
was
the big
liberal
push
government
behind it. Okay.
And, you know, we had allies. It was a good initiative. It'd been worked on over the years. It took a lot of work and a lot of lobbying by just not one council, previous councils. Lots of leadership have been working this.
It was a community initiative for sure.
Over the decades. It just didn't lead up to, I mean, there's been a lot of good work put forward, and hats off to community members that got on that road. My point being that the reconciliation discussions, you know, since colonization, has been a hit and miss kind of deal. And quiet. Sorry. So irregardless with the reconciliation discussions, it takes a movement to create the synergy for a table, and it takes the experience and depth and character of the council members to understand that.
Right.
And carry on that legacy on behalf of the community. That, unfortunately, was dropped flat-hearted. It doesn't matter what anybody says. I've seen the action and the frustration. We had an Office of Reconciliation that was ready to go at the beginning of the term. For whatever reason, this council killed that initiative. That's disheartening.
Right.
Because we had a window of opportunity and agreed upon, and now, you know, we're coming in late. We'll rebuild, but we could have been knee deep in discussions about jurisdiction and what that framework is going to look
no,
like.
No, I
that could be so much farther ahead. Than
I agree and disagree, considering the Trudeau policies that have morphed in the past year and a half. Right, it could have gone, but I agree that that's something could have been done. Whatever that something was is up for debate.
Could have explored it.
Could have explored a lot more. So look, let's just say that if you were to get elected in, you become council. This would be your second time coming back in after a hiatus of not being elected in. So people up there would probably be saying, well, you know, there's a reason why I didn't vote for Mike, whoever that person is. By the way, I voted for you, just so you know, your cousin, bloody. but those people, what would you say to those people who decided last election that I'm not going to put an X next to Mike's name? What would you say to those people now for them to put an X next to your name, whoever those people are?
Well, policy and procedure changes. Change is good. I'm glad I was not in. The break was good. It was needed for myself. 12 years is... there's a pretty good stringent mandate to be under the thumb of every eye of the membership. What would I say to them now?
You felt like you were kind of being watched all the time?
You always are. As an elected official, that's just the nature of the job. If you're not signed up and ready to be cross-examined and ridiculed upside down and left and right, but then the job is not for you.
Okay, no, fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah.
Having said that, it was a good mental break.
Good break for you.
But, you know, I'm working for the Okanagan Nation Alliance, doing business development for them. I have my MBA, doing great things for the nation. I know where I can contribute, and I know what you. I've been there. I'm not a rookie council member. I've got depth. I've got experience. I bring that to a bunch of council members that have very little experience.
Do you think your experience could be a pitfall?
No, my experience would be to help and assist. That this isn't really. It's the job is as difficult as you want to make it. If you work and work within team environment or an inclusive, you can make this job fun, exciting, interesting, and work towards, you know, the ultimate goal of improving our community. There's not only is there the reconciliation, there's still those housing initiatives that we're working on that have been worked on for the last 12 years. We just didn't land into the beautiful setting. There's been planning that's gone on for Falcon Lane and the different housing projects that are improving over the years, the planning that has gone into that, this decade, over a decade, 15, 20 years has gone into that development.
And you were part of that planning?
Certainly a part of it. Was a part of a team that planted those seeds and built what is
right
there.
No, yeah, I don't ask you about your experience being a pitfall to be facetious, mm-hmm. but there's an argument that fresh eyes, someone could say, look, fresh eyes is better than maybe someone who's been in there a long time and kind of got used to like a certain way of doing things. What would you say to that?
I would say, regardless of who gets it, your first term is a learning experience to where you're not even going to know how this government really functions.
That's fair. It's a lot going on.
It's a 50 plus million dollar annual budget, working with the staff, what your role and responsibility is, even though it relates to the Constitution, but understanding where you fit, how you govern, you know, and how your input goes into that organization. You have to work as a team and know your role. You're not an employee. You give direction, you create policy and
That's right.
for the community on behalf of the community, and you work with our existing staff to get those policies improvements up and running.
So how do you think,
I was going to say, so what do you think went wrong with the recent proposed housing project? Because pretty much historically we've almost voted yes on every housing
so project. let's just pause for a second. Jared, do you want to like update our listeners on what that was for those of us who haven't read it or seen it?
The housing project, I believe it's supposed to be right down the hill from here, so it's below East Boundary and Gross, the corner there, I think.
Okay.
And then it was going to be a furthering of subsidized housing. It was called What was the name of the project again? Do you remember? It was something.
That's like minute details, but it was supposed to be in a certain area. So you're obviously supportive of membership housing.
Well, geez, you know the allotment law and housing initiatives that have been going on. It is a huge thing to house our members, affordable housing. It's come full circle, and it's we've got some of the best housing developments going as far as I'm concerned. As far as I can see, and what we've been able to do, hats off to our community. Hats off to our staff for implementing. And you know, there's a lot of good folks down in community services. They've been, you know, like Loretta and those. That's right up her alley. They've been doing stuff with the Department of Indian Affairs and whatnot, and funding and initiatives rolling. And it kind of just keeps snowballing in a good way.
Okay.
And so housing, of course, there's housing issues and there's also solutions. I speak of that, but that's always going to be a good challenge. Housing for our members has gone up significantly over the last decade.
How do you see that improving in your time in office?
Well, to continue to implement good policies and procedures. We've set some land aside up there on Falcon Lane. We did some planning years ago. We saw what the phases would look like, and we saw what the build-out would look like. There's also a housing that's slated to go down and expand down on Elk. There's a spot there, and other parcels in Gallagher's Canyon that we've looked at, depending on infrastructure and capacity issues. So, you know, it's a three-pronged approach: affordable housing, also allotment for our members, and just based on their housing needs. So I think it's a work in progress.
Do you think that developing the Gallagher's Canyon for housing would create like a social inequality, that some people have Gallagher's Canyon houses and no, you only have this road of houses, or you know, you're over here and I'm over there?
I don't think it'll create that. It's going to be a huge leap just to put infrastructure in and get in over there.
Should we create parks over there instead?
Well, I don't think you replace this or replace that with this. I think you go along with the prolonged, with a sustainable approach, that it will become reality at some point in time with a nice subdivision plan. Of course, there'll be parks. Of course, there'll be all those things in every community that you need, you know, institutional, you know, fire safety?
No, for sure. I don't think we have. We don't really have like a land base of parks at this point. Like in terms of like, you know, an area of trails or what have you. And I always thought to myself, I'm not saying I'm right, but to have a piece like Gallagher's and maintain that for on the land use, whatever that means, recreational use, right? Sustainable use. I think that's something to look at.
I know there are pathways that we've incorporated already up there. Call them green pathways as part of our ratification to get those lands put into reserve status. You know, we had to agree to some issues from the city,
like
it or not.
Right.
It is what it is at the end of the day, but it's not hurting pathways and to have, you know,
green space.
Sustainable green space. Yeah, I think everybody wants it. And one of the members just emailed me the other day and said they were in support and they were very interested in having a, you know, what about a dog park?
Do you still have your WFN email?
Hey?
I'm teasing.
really. But, you know, I guess some of the other things that come to mind would be, you know, you ask, where's kind of my track record? Well, I remind you, my first term we went logging, and look at the sustainability of conducting harvesting within our traditional territory. I think your dividend check last week is full and full-on responsible heartland and our resources from the cutting of our resources and our outstanding title and rights issues came and hit you right in the pocket there.
But
as a dividend, and that's why those reconciliation discussions are so important to keep moving forward on those types.
Right, on the title rights.
Anybody that reads the newspaper locally, though, has seen these mills shutting down in the area, so forestry isn't going to be the end all.
Is it a sustainable
practice for our economy? Right, we'll need to diversify our economy even more now because of the recent election in the U.S. changing the Canadian economy as far as forest products go.
I mean, the BC government always undersells their logs at market.
Long and short of it is, we were able to tie up over 150,000 acres of property. Whether we log on that or whether we do other activities on that, the point is.
So you just heard Jared and I talking to Mike, finishing up talking about logging. We actually had 18 more minutes of audio. That was actually pretty good. We thought so anyways. But something happened. Something glitched. I'm not sure if I pushed something or didn't push something. I could have swore I turned off the podcast and said thanks to Mike at 38 minutes. But that didn't happen. So what you're getting now is an FYI addendum to tell you that there's about 18 minutes that we don't know what happened to it. We've spent the past hour trying to figure it out. We can't. What we will do, though, is we're going to do our best to sum up for you what we did talk about. The first thing I can start off with is that we talked about accountability financially. What does that look like? What would he do different? Mike responded that our current remuneration laws are pretty good as is. That nothing really substantial needs to change about it, and that what we have in place, the quarterly reporting, the yearly financial audits, that's enough. When I re-inquired about certain aspects of personal finances, he again reiterated the fact that we are unique as an Indigenous community with our transparency laws and with our financial accountability laws. Having said that, if you listen to the first podcast of this series, Jared and I disagreed with that statement in our initial podcast, and maybe you do too, and maybe you don't. That's okay. This is about dialogue. This is about putting our opinion out there and saying this is what we think about it. Doesn't necessarily mean we're right or wrong. We're just putting it out there. The other thing we talked about.
I brought up the recent drug crisis on the reserve as it pertains to the housing issues. There are drug houses. And then later, Aaron brought up the actual overdose deaths. Mike's answer to these were that we need to have a zero tolerance policy, in his opinion. We need to have a zero tolerance policy on drug houses especially. And we need to have a zero tolerance policy on drug dealers. He brought up that in the past he has helped with these sort of initiatives. And then going on to restorative justice and
rehabilitation of members that get involved in these circles. Mike said that he's been a part of that in the past as well, and that that's something that we need to work on as a community, and that he believes there is improvements on their way that could happen through community services, could happen through policy, and further, that he is completely on board with helping with those.
So we definitely apologize to everyone. We wish we could have put everything out there that we heard and we spoke to Mike about. We did talk to him and let him know we were doing this. We offered to come re-record. Everyone's got lives and they're busy during this busy time, and so that was unable to happen. Having said that, if you are on the slate for chief or council, we'd like to hear from you. I know we've said this a million times. I'm going to say it again, just putting that invite out there. If you know someone, your relative, that is doing it and they're not on Facebook or they're not connected, they haven't heard about this, please tell them. We'd love to have them on here to talk about these issues. So thanks everyone for listening. Episode 4 will drop Sunday. Episode 5 will drop Sunday. We got a treat for you on Sunday, guys. 2 episodes. Wait for it. Sorry, one last thing. In the podcast, you heard me joke to Mike that I voted for him because he's my cousin. Unfortunately, I'm a little more critical thinking than to vote for people who I know. I vote based on my conscience, based on my ethics, based on rationality and critical thinking. Anyways, having said that, I tell everyone I vote for them as a matter of joke. It's a bad joke. I realize it. So I'm admitting my own poor humor. Guys, looking forward to Sunday. Thanks. Talk soon. White.